Our subject this afternoon is going to be given by four of our brethren. In the first section of it, and our subject is trouble. First, we will have the times of trouble in Psalms 46:2, given by Brother Penrose, and the spirit of fear in 2 Timothy 1:7 by Brother Burton Brown. I will now turn the platform over to Brother Penrose on the time of trouble.
Thank you, Glenn. The time of trouble. I think you would all agree with me that we are in a time of trouble. And I hope you'll agree with me that that time of trouble started with the ending of Gentile times in 1914, has continued down through the years to the present time, and will continue on until finally all has been accomplished in the Lord's plan in regards to that time of trouble, and then it will be brought to an end. The 46th Psalm in the second verse is the text that has been selected for the thoughts we are to express. And it reads, "Therefore will we not fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea." Now, we don't want to isolate that text, so I want to go back to the first verse, because that's a comforting verse for this thought of the second verse. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Not only in this time of trouble, but in our own personal troubles. And I'm sure that we all have from time to time personal troubles. And here is the assurance that we have this refuge in God, and we have the assurance of His strength, that He will give to us His strength and His grace in every time of need. We can approach Him through our great high priest, and He is ever ready to hear our pleas, our prayers, and our beseechments. Then the third verse, of course, must be associated with the thought, "Though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof." Now we have, of course, highly symbolic expressions here. The earth being removed perhaps is a reference to the earth's society, not to the literal earth, because we know that the scriptures assure us that the earth abideth forever, so we're not referring to this planet earth. And though the mountains, in many instances, mountains represent kingdoms or nations, though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, and in many instances we think of the sea as representing the masses of mankind. I think that's the general expression that we use. Though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, that perhaps would be a reference to the various elements of society, our economy, our politics, our social life, and so on. Though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof, and certainly today the mountains, the kingdoms, are shaking, aren't they? I have often thought that in this present time, and I don't know how many years back we would go, but amongst our world leaders, we really lack leadership. There's no question about that. We used to speak of statesmen, orators, and men who could sway people. And we lack that today in our leadership throughout the world. And perhaps that is one of the reasons that these mountains are slowly crumbling away. Now, there are other references, of course, in the scriptures to the time of trouble, and perhaps the most outstanding one, aside from Daniel's, in Daniel 12:1, and remember he predicted there that there would be a time of trouble such as never was. This is Daniel 12:1. Time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation even to that same time. And then we go over to our Lord's answer to the question of the disciples when he asked, or they ask him, "When shall these things be?" This is Matthew 24:3. "And what shall be the sign of thy presence and of the end of the age. And among other things, he made a statement that I think refers to this present time, and it wasn't original with him. He was really quoting Daniel, but he added something to it. In Matthew 24, 21 and 22, he said, "For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be." Now, he speaks of it as great tribulation. I know that some brethren think of the time of trouble and then a great time of trouble, which I assume is a reference to the final phase of the time of trouble. And that, personally, is the way I like to express it. We have the time of trouble, and then we have the final phase of the time of trouble that will involve certain things that the Scriptures refer to. There is Jacob's trouble. There is the Battle of Armageddon, the final preparation for the establishment of the kingdom and the putting into operation of the new covenant. Our Lord said, "Then, except these days, so those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved." Now, the Matthew account doesn't read too well, I don't believe. It reads, the latter part of that 22nd verse, "But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened." But I think you're all aware of the fact that it should read, "But because of the elect, those days shall be shortened." Because of the intervention of Christ and His church. Now, we're at a point of time where man does have, and this is not new to any of you, you're all aware of it, I'm sure, where man does have the capacity to destroy himself, to carry out this statement, destroy all flesh, all life upon this planet. But our Lord has assured us, in His words here, that this won't take place, that those days will be shortened, or in other words, if man should begin to use these destructive forces that he has, God is not going to use them. But if man begins to use them, I think the Lord will call a halt to it. But it seems to be indicated in our proper translation of that 22nd verse that this stopping of it would not occur till after the church is in glory and complete. Now, Mark, the companion verse to that in Mark, the 13th chapter, reads just a little bit different, and I rather like it. It's the 10th and the 19th and the 20th verses. "For in those days shall be affliction such as was not from the beginning of the creation which God created unto this time, neither shall be. And except that the Lord had shortened those days," showing that this was pre-planned, this was a part of God's plan, that those days would be shortened, that there was really never any threat of complete extinction of mankind. "And except that the Lord had shortened those days, no flesh should be saved. But for the elect's sake, whom he hath chosen," and this gives us our thought of it being a reference to the church, Christ in the church, "whom he hath chosen, he hath shortened those days." In his plan, the stopping point has already been set. We don't know it, of course, but the Lord does. And the Lord will see that at the proper time, it stops. No matter how reckless man might become with nuclear energy, or how one of the world's leaders may decide to use the thermonuclear bombs that they have and so on, the Lord is not going to permit it to accomplish the destruction of all flesh. There's another thought in connection with that I want to point out to you, that there would be no purpose in destroying all flesh. The purpose of man being here on earth during these past 6,000 years has been for what? To learn, since the transgression of Garden of Eden, to learn the exceeding sinfulness of sin. If man is destroyed without having these experiences in this time of trouble, he's not going to learn anything by being in the grave. He's going to learn by the experiences that this trouble brings to him. And certainly they are learning it. This leads us to the 21st chapter of Luke, the 25th through the 28th verses, and let me read those to you. "And there shall be signs in the sun and the moon and the stars, and upon the earth distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth. for the powers of heaven shall be shaken, and then shall they see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. And then here is the Lord's message to us. And when these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your deliverance, not redemption, for your deliverance draweth nigh. And we see those things coming to pass, don't we? Going back to the 25th verse. Upon the earth, distress of nations with perplexity. And isn't that what we see today? Distress of the nations, perplexity, no way to solve their problems. In fact, there is one translation, I'm sorry that I don't have it marked here, that reads, no way out. And isn't that true? I don't know whether any of you, perhaps at some time or another, been in an amusement park and you've gone into what they call the house of maze, and you wander through there and finally you're lost. You can't find your way out. You went one day this way and that way, and you can't find the exit. That's the way the nations of today are and the leaders of the world. They're in a maze. They're confused. There's no way out of the situation they find themselves in, this time of trouble. Then we come down to the 26th verse. Men's hearts failing them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth. And here again is the thought of they see no way out. Men's hearts failing them for fear. I think that today, because we see mankind, and he has a great many more pleasures to indulge in today than he did 40, 50, 60 years ago. He has more leisure time. He has more pleasures. We have a number of football leagues in the football season. We have the baseball season. We have boating. Tennis has been revived. We have golf. And we find that many of the world's people in nations where they have the resources to partake in these amusements or these activities are doing that. It would seem as though they didn't have a care in the world. But I think it's a way that they use to push into the back of their minds the fear that is there, because our Lord told us that there would be this fear, men's hearts failing them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth. So I think in the minds of most people today, the average citizen of this country and of other countries, they are mainly concerned with the present, the pleasures of the present, and by indulging in those, they put into the back of their minds the fear that certainly must be there. Think of a month or so ago, or perhaps a little longer, I don't remember the date, when they had the tragedy in Chernobyl in Russia. The fear that that caused worldwide, really. There was quite a bit of fear in this country for a while. They tried to assure the people there was no danger, and perhaps there wasn't. We won't question or dispute that. But nevertheless, there in the background is always this fear. And man stands at a point of time when, if the Lord did permit it, he could indeed destroy himself. Now, I was told that when I reached a certain point of time, I was to introduce the next speaker. And I've reached that point of time. We could go on with this for whatever length of time you could tolerate it. And so the next subject is the spirit of fear, taken from or based upon 2 Timothy 1:7, and Brother Burton Brown is going to consider that subject for us.